Good afternoon, planet Earth. Good afternoon to my friends out there in Scrimpton and Flimpton and Brimpton. Good afternoon to my pals running through the swamps, chasing gators, hunting after catfish, the big bluefish, you know what I mean. It's Thursday, September the 14th, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc, almost 4 p.m. where I'm at. I don't know what time it is where you're at, and I probably don't fucking care. Dan, that's no attitude. Well, it's my attitude. I own it. I own my mind. You own yours too. Yeah. And I am, as a matter of record, back in Washington State. I am at an undisclosed location on the Olympic Peninsula, many, many miles from Seattle. I was in Seattle yesterday, but I'm not there today. And yeah, I went on a trip. I feel like a fool to some extent, not because of the trip itself, though it was kind of crappy, and not because of the destination. You know, I got to meet one of my listeners, and I'm actually really happy to have met him. But I've come to the realization that there's going to be no easy way out of it for any of us, including myself. And this idea that I'm going to magically replace whatever I had in Utah, well, that's a bit crazy, isn't it? Probably not going to happen. If you're wondering, did I basically circle the drain for a whole month since I left Utah? The simple answer is yeah. Did I discover a few things? Yes and no. I saw nothing on my crooked voyage that would convince me that anything is substantially different than what it was a month ago. But it is what it is. I'm not sure what happens next. I feel like I went to the well with my listeners a few too many times in the last month. If you want to send me an angry email saying, Dan, how the hell did you get to Glumpton? How the hell did you travel through Denver and Scrivisville? How the heck did you end up back where you started? And I don't have a good answer except to say I'm really, really good at doing what I do, which is more or less, you know, perfecting the art of failure. That's how I feel right now. As far as the podcast goes, I'm going to keep putting effort into it because why wouldn't I? It's something I enjoy doing. It's something that I'm going to keep on doing as long as my keyboard and my microphone and other tools and instruments hold out. But it's hard to say how long that is. I'm not going to cover much news. And it's not just because I'm in the park. I can get headlines, I can listen to the radio, there's lots of ways for me to get the news, but it's more or less crap. I don't care if it's the Ukraine bullshit, the COVID part two that seems to be coming back, the Trump trauma drama, the brain dead Biden damage, it does not matter. I stick to my guns on this, and nothing about my trip has led me to believe anything different. All of this nonsense, much of it organized military psychological warfare, serves a purpose. And it serves a purpose to obscure, to hide, something else. So that's where I'm at. I don't know what the thing is, neither do you. I don't know what creeps this way, you don't either. And if you want to tell me, well, Dan, I was listening to somebody on Spotify or Rumble or YouTube or Minds. I was listening to a new podcast. They told me it's all about the secret gold in the Grand Canyon. I don't give a blank. I don't care. The news is crap. Other sources, like the alternatives, quote unquote, are also crap. You are in the same situation as me. You are inside of a fishbowl, surrounded by television sets, trying to figure out what reality is. And you don't necessarily have a better idea than me. And if you happen to turn out correct, it's going to be luck, just like me. But as far as the news goes, I couldn't care less. Just like that bus driver said, I have delved the depths of not caring any more than I have to. And as far as the headlines go, I could not care less. I don't care who you're voting for. I don't care if you're voting for Trump or Biden or RFK Jr. I don't care if you hope they pull in Tulsi Gabbard. I don't care. None of these folks will make a difference. And I often wonder, you know, what the election year of 2024 is going to look like. It seems like an abstraction to me right now. It seems like a lot of wishful thinking to think that there's going to be an election, but maybe, right? Who knows? I am simply convinced that all of this noise is intended to hide something. That's it. And I've been consistent on this since more or less March of 2020. Well, that's no kind of attitude. Ugh. Yeah, I had to fly again. I flew. Why? Because the Greyhound sucks and trains are too expensive. So I flew. And here's the thing I do before I fly. Once I get through security, once the TSA is done cupping my balls and massaging my prostate, I try to go into a space inside my head, a private little world. You know, it's a perfect little place I can go to for those hours of flight, where I'm surrounded by all the drungo folk, where the various, you know, airline employees, the servants of the sky, come around with scribbly bits and salty nubbles. I'm a flight attendant. You sure as crap are. You're a flight attendant. I go into my head. I play pretend in my head. I pretend I'm someplace else until the plane lands and I can, you know, scuffle my way to the baggage claim and grab whatever bits and pieces are left over and then take the next leg of whatever journey I might be on. There's a lot of delusion and illusion out there, baby. There's a lot of denial, anger, and bargaining. Fantasy is rampant. Just about everybody I know, personal, friends, strangers, just about everyone is negotiating with reality. They're playing that game. They're trying to find the magical safe spot, the thing that could happen where everything's going to be okay. Well, maybe, Dan, the aliens will show up and give us hyper technology. Maybe the people of the inner earth will scrub the fungi off their cave and treat us for the drunktus. Maybe there'll be space travelers and dimensional travelers and star beings. Maybe there's a secret cabal. They want us all to be happy. They want us to have everything we need. Maybe. I want to talk about the difference between your physical baggage, the baggage you carry around, which another interesting phenomenon I've been going through. I preached about it a number of months ago, and I know that one of my listeners out there, a really cool dude, wants the reference to the podcast. Well, my suggestion would be go to the blog and search for it. I'll try to remember to get it to you. But a number of months ago, I pointed out that one of the tricks to life, and it's a Dr. Freckles quote, is knowing what to take with you and what to leave behind. You can't take everything with you. When you die, you will take nothing with you. And throughout life, you can certainly have a garage if you can afford a home. You can fill it with crap that you never use. You can say to yourself, well, I've got a garage full of crap, so I win. I got a garage full of shit, Dan. I win. Well, maybe you do. In the crooked game of piling crap, you win. But there is a wisdom in understanding how to let things go, how to leave things behind. And you'd say, well, does this only apply, Dan, to physical stuff like the golf clubs I never use or that old raft with holes in it? No, it applies to other things as well. It applies to the mental baggage, the demons, the fears, the trauma, the stuff that's inside of you that you carry with you. You have to know what to leave behind, but this is where things get trickier. It's easy enough to clean out your garage, right? Or you can hire somebody from, you know, Craigslist, gonna get robbed. You can clean out your garage, but it's not so easy to clean out your mind, especially when those memories, those experiences, those feelings are deeply connected to who you are. They make up who you are. Like it or not, especially if you're as old as me, who you are is who you're probably going to stay. You should make peace with that. But don't pretend for one moment that as you travel on these roads, that you can take that and move it anywhere. Don't pretend. Okay, one of the lessons I've learned in the last 10 days is that it's easy enough to say to yourself, well, if I just, you know, pack up my bags and move to another location, I can start again. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Whatever crap you have in your head, you're going to take with you. Whatever horrors, whatever total fears and anxieties, whatever duress, you will take it with you. And it's not anyone else's business or burden, but yours. This is critical. It's not some random person's burden to deal with your crap. It is your crap to deal with. If you want to know the headline of the last 10 days, here it is. You can travel and crisscross this frickin' country, and you can leave a whole bunch of stuff behind, and you can give things away, and you can lighten your physical load. But in all that process, you may be keeping a lot of baggage with you, and it's the kind that has no mass, no real weight, because it exists in the brain, the mind, the soul. And there's a good chance, no matter how many self-help books you read, no matter how much transcendental meditation you do, I don't care how zen you are, there's a good chance that a lot of that baggage will stay with you till the day you die. You can cover it up. You can use all kinds of drugs, alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, the antidepressants and drugs the doctors give you. You can use other kinds of drugs like television and YouTube. You can fill your brain with noise and chemicals, and that baggage is likely still there. In fact, it festers. The more you bury it, the more you pretend it doesn't exist, the more you give out little speeches about have a positive attitude and wear a smile, it festers. It gets worse. It doesn't get better. Does that mean you're trapped? Well, no, and yes. Arguably, as a human being, you are a function of your experiences. And you can say, well, I've had nothing but crappy experiences, Dan. Well, too bad, I guess. But that's your life. So there you go. If you want to understand why it is I am back in Washington State, it's because my burdens are mine. They're mine, and I'm not ashamed or proud. And if you want to say, well, Dan, that's a kind of a crappy attitude, beat bricks. Crappier attitudes are coming and not from me. Okay? I've seen some things. I spent a little bit of time, about an hour, in downtown New York City the other night, and we'll talk about that later. And believe me, no amount of pretending that you've met the crappiest person in the world makes that true. And a lot of the suffering and the chaos that is currently festering and dividing and multiplying like tumors in the city, how can I put this? Tumors metastasize. Cancer metastasizes. That pain will go other places. And I don't care where you are. You could be on a submarine at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. And you will not escape that. And neither will I. When I was on the plane flying to Seattle, it was an Alaska Airlines plane, a 737, living dangerously, right? I was on the plane and they had this little folder thing, this handout saying 737-800/900 rafting. And of course, you know, it's not what you think it is, but maybe. I imagined an inflatable raft with a big old General Electric engine or maybe a Rolls Royce. Yes, a rubber raft or a sturdier kind of hard bottom rubber raft for rafting those big rivers, class 5. And along with it is a 737 engine and a pilot and a stewardess handing out little crumbly nuts full of salt. And they say to you, would you like to have a glass of water or a Coca-Cola or an 8-ball of cocaine? While you raft, you're rafting, you're on the water, we're gonna spin up the jet. Yeah, so anywho, I'm sure the rafting doesn't refer to actual rafting where your raft is built out of the crinkly parts of a 737 that crashed into a mountain because some particular pilot was changing his anxiety meds. But what if, right? What if you built yourself a hunky-dunk raft out of the bits and pieces of a 737 and you hooked up a big old engine? And you had some type of crazy-ass throttle. And you went out there on the open sea, going as fast as you can until you find the end. 737 rafting, baby. I was at the Air and Space Museum yesterday, the Boeing Museum of Aircraft. And I was looking at the Concorde they have there. You know, the Concorde, the supersonic transport back in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. If you were rich, if you were powerful, if you were the $6 million man, you could get on a Concorde and fly from New York City to Paris and get there in about an hour and a half or something. But what's funny about the Concorde are those little portals, the little windows you can look out of. They're not very big. They look about, you know, 4 inches by 5 inches or smaller. And, you know, you could say, well, Dan, that's because they have to go so fast. Well, you know, that's true. I believe the Concorde flew at a couple times the speed of sound at about 50 to 60,000 feet. But what if, and I'm just speculating, that the problem with the Concorde at 50 or 60,000 feet is that any old schmuck could look out the window and see something. Are you a flat earther, Dan? No, no, no. I should have been born in Missouri. I am a person who wants to be shown the truth before I absolutely believe it. It doesn't mean that I, you know, pretend that things don't exist. It's more like if you want to hype up something like outer space or genetic engineering or anything else, you have to make a fairly compelling argument. And you have to give me evidence that is sound. On the other hand, if most of your evidence is bullshit, I don't care. I'll smile, I'll nod, I'll say, holy crap, have you ever flown on the Concorde? They got these little windows you can look out of. You can see the shape of the world. There's people who've asked me about the slow burn. And, you know, they say, well, Dan, you know, the Roman, let's just talk about the Roman Empire for a second. Because people oversimplify that scenario. Here's a trick question. When did the Roman Empire finally collapse? Well, Dan, I think it happened in the 5th century. No. It happened, I think, in 1453, when the Turks scaled the walls of Constantinople. By the time you get to the 5th century AD, the Roman Empire is split into two halves, the Eastern and the Western. So when you say things like, well, it's going to be a slow burn like the Rome, be more frickin' specific. Because the actual Roman Empire lasted a long, long time. Lasted well into the Renaissance. However, the Western half of it did collapse in the 5th century. Now, in the 1st and 2nd century AD, I think you had, like, what, less than 4 or 5 emperors per century. And then there was the 3rd century. The 3rd century AD, I think you had well over 30 emperors. Does that sound like a slow burn? Does that sound like things were moving slowly? And understand this, we're talking about technology and society and economics that is radically different than today. Not nearly as ramped up or amped up or fueled up, not nearly as coke-filled. And yet, if you go from the 2nd to the 3rd century, it's night and day. By the time you get to the 4th century, the Praetorian Guard is more or less selling the empire to whoever will buy it. And then you have Constantine. And then you have Constantine making Christianity a state religion. And then eventually, within a few decades, you do have the collapse of the Western Roman Empire. There is a battle, I think it's Adrianople, I want to say 378 AD. Some consider it to be one of the most significant defeats of the Roman military in Roman history. That may or may not be true. But what I can tell you is by the time you reach the year 400, the Roman Empire, as we understand it in the West, is toast. It's bits and pieces of various barbarian guards and warlords, Franks and Visigoths and Ostrogoths, various Germanic tribes, all trying to play pretend. They would take on the garb of the Romans. They'd learn Latin, sort of. They'd try to. They would play the game like they're Romans, but they really weren't. Now, was that a slow burn? In historical terms, I'd argue not. Was the collapse of the Mongolian Empire, in terms of how quickly it grew and then fell apart, was that a slow burn? In historical terms, no. But here's the further difference, as I said. We are a civilization and a society that is heavily ramped up. Way more ramped up than the Romans or the Mongolians or just about any other empire, to include the British Empire that came before us. We're flying 100,000 feet in the sky. Most of these empires barely made it, you know, a few thousand feet up. So you think it's going to be a slow burn, huh? Graceful degradation, gradualism. That's wishful thinking. Would nature be so kind? Would nature say, well, gee, you guys went from 0 to 100 in about a century, but we're going to give you 200 or 300 years to fall apart. Do you really think that's how nature or economics or society works? You see, what I've come to understand about the slow burn scenario is it's a lot of, like I said, wishful thinking, hopeful thinking. Wouldn't it be great, Dan, if we slowly fell apart like the Roman Empire? Well, gee, pick up a book and study what actually happened. Like I said, at one point in the 3rd century, the Praetorian Guard, the guard of the emperors, they sold the empire to some dude for like so many millions and millions of sesterces, so much gold. Here you go. You get to be emperor now. Now, of course, I think they killed him a little bit later because there was a better offer probably. There's going to be no slow burn. What we're facing is going to be non-linear, discontinuous, brutal, and it's going to be like having your teeth knocked out. And everyone will have a plan until they don't. And it will seem more or less normal and gradual until it doesn't. And on the day things start to slip, it's not going to be f of x equals x. It's also probably not going to be f of x equals x squared. It's more like g of x equals x squared, and then you have a discontinuous scenario, and now you're in, f of x equals, the exponential function. It's more like that. Discontinuity, nonlinear, that's what's coming. In Seattle yesterday, I looked at Mount Rainier. And I don't care who sends me a gaslighting email. Screw off if you want to. Mount Rainier looks like shit. When I was a kid, it would be more or less covered in snow year-round throughout the summer. That would include the Cascades and the Olympics. They would have snow and ice year-round. You can say, well, Dan, periodically. Yeah, periodically things change. And sometimes, when it's outside of equilibrium, it's non-linear and discontinuous and not frickin' gradual. There is nothing linear about what Mount Rainier looks like right now. It looks like it's been trashed. It looks like it's more or less a big old bare rock. You think that's a good sign? Tell me. Send me an email and tell me, when you look at Mount Rainier, if you're over the age of 40, do you think it's a good sign? Do you think it portends something positive, that it looks like a bare rock? Maybe, right? We were at the Safeway in Burien, near Seattle. They had 2 security guards. They had shut down the bathrooms. They put a nice little note up saying, blah, 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 we're really sorry. It turns out hobos were taking showers and having sex. And so we shut down the bathrooms. I get it. In 2019, before the COVID, they were stacking up security guards at just about every grocery store I went to in Seattle. It was like night and day. The day before, there were no security guards. The next day, you got one at both doors. Why? Because they're guarding the thing in economics class they called an inferior good. You remember your econ class from 20 or 30 years ago? Well, Dan, there are inferior goods, normal goods, and luxury goods. And food is an inferior good because it's really cheap and everybody gets it. Not anymore, bozo. Heck, I'm waiting for the day you want to go get ramen packets and they're $5 a piece. You say, well, Dan, that'll never happen. I can still get ramen for about 50, 75 cents. It's coming, baby. But what's even more likely is there won't be anything there. There won't be anything. There won't be any ramen. There won't be any crappy canned food. You won't have any mold-infested bread. It will simply be empty. You'll roll your little wheelbarrow, your your hypothetical barrel of money to that particular store, and I don't care how full it is, there will be nothing to buy. If you're expecting a gradual descent into stagflation or hyperinflation, get ready, pal, because that's not on the menu. And if you look at Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, you look at his face, he knows it too. He's always got one eye on the door. You can tell whenever he's given briefings to Congress, he's got an eye on the door. He's got some guy waiting for him just about any time of day, 24/7, to take him to a helicopter called the soft landing. He knows. He knows he's chasing a tiger, inflation, and he knows he's being chased by a bear, deflation, and he knows that there's no wiggle room. If he catches the tiger, the bear kills him. If he slows down too much, the tiger will probably turn around and kill him. In either case, the tiger and the bear will grab Jerome Powell by his nuts and his hair and tear him in half. He knows. You can tell by looking at him. Don't listen to his words about, you know, higher for longer. Yeah, we're all going to be higher for longer if we get the right drugs. Well, Dan, that's no kind of attitude. Yeah, well, you listen to my podcast for a reason, pal. No, not going to be gradual, not going to be slow. It hasn't really happened yet. And best case scenario, what they've been covering up with, you know, with actually real austerity and fake events, what they've been covering up, best case scenario, is total economic collapse. And it's going to be ugly. Ugly, like what I saw Tuesday at midnight near Madison Square Garden in New York City. This is a tale of that Flix bus stop. Flix is a partner of Greyhound, and they have a little bus stop. It's not really a station, not a terminal. It's a nasty little piece of parking lot covered in grime and cockroaches and homeless people and whores. This is a tale of that stop near Madison Square Gardens off of 31st Street. And let's just get warmed up here, baby. They cast their eyes at me. They cast their eyes at me and I winced. As the Tuesday night coaster zoomed on by, their women folk in tow, as the Johns look on, seeking sweaty and degrading liaisons in some grimy alleyway covered in bacteria. You from Frimpton? Screamed Benny. He knows. He can't really read or write, but Benny knows. Benny ruled the streets around 31st. He carried a carpenter's hammer and a roll of quarters. He was the shot caller on that block, working for the West Side Jew clan, running the flesh show near Broadway and Madison Square Gardens. Big B, as they called Benny, sat large on his Honda scooter, running circles around the German tourists. He would circle the gawkers and the weird Europeans and the Chinese vacationers, murmuring their broken English with strong accents from faraway places, being so aloof to the circumstances because where they come from is just as bad. The flicker bus passengers would huddle in the darkness as the land crab scuttles by, looking for some bagel left behind during the morning rush hour slog. Benny was rounding up the Jew whores and other ne'er-do-wells this night. He had his brigade of bubulet dealers strutting, cussing, too coy or worried to look long. Benny was a cowboy of sorts, keeping the flesh moving, making sure that all the old freaks could take a look and maybe decide based on window dressing. The women were scared and poor. They wore tight clothes with tears and visible bloodstains on their jeans near the crotch. Benny had to have a stony heart to do what he did. Yes, Benny had to have a hard heart, a rocky heart, to do the things he needed to do, to be who he was. Benny had competition, baby. Benny faced opposition from the Strug Boys of Harlem. They didn't like how his crew was muscling in on the action and taking their cheddar. Benny was constantly menaced by the Hoover Scouts of Crown Heights. They carried fully automatic Glock 19s and would spray their lead spew wherever they threw down. Benny was harried by the boomer rats of Park Avenue. Yes, Benny was harried and harassed by the boomer rats of Park Avenue. And these old skis freaks did not mess around. One-on-one, they weren't much, but in groups of 10 or 20, they would surround you and pummel you with their wisdom and insight. That's the name of their bats. By the time it was over, you'd pray for death. Finally, there were the Romeo dealers, spreading meth and ecstasy and crocodile. They'd sell blues, which is basically a fentanyl pill, to the street rats. And after they smoked a blue, they would walk around like willing death zombies, willing to do whatever the Romeo dealer wanted them to do. Something ugly, something bad, something mad, something crazy. But Benny's fine. Benny's fine. This is his milieu. This is his artistic space. His ilk were striving in a world of degradation and deformed values. Stale bread, moldy wet t-shirts. They would sleep in the sewers and in the tunnels. They would sleep in the various workspaces left behind by strugglers 100 years ago. He and his men were ready to go for whatever, whatever's up. And it's happening tonight. Benny's not leaving. Are you leaving? Are you leaving? Are you leaving to find safe harbor? Are you leaving to find a special place in the sun? Benny's coming. And he's coming for you, baby. That's right, Benny's coming for you, baby. He's coming for you. Dan, That's terrible. Why can't you tell us about the war in the Ukraine? Screw the hell off. Whatever you think it is, it probably isn't. Could there be people there fighting a war, using up ammo, blowing each other up? Sure. Do you understand any more than I do its purpose? No. If you come back, well, they're money laundering. The people that run this country haven't had to worry about money laundering since 1913. Yeah, you get the regular little, you know, scandals periodically. Well, that's BCCI, the Bank of Criminals and Crooks International. Yeah, you get that crap periodically, but my friends, they haven't had to do any real laundering for a long time. Once they invented the Federal Reserve, they could push money wherever they wanted to. There were soldiers in Iraq who would drive around handing out bricks of $100 bills to random warlords. I know this because I used to be in the army, and I got this from a primary source. They would drive to some warlord and say, here's your bricks, here's your hundreds. There were soldiers in Afghanistan who would guard opium and then later get back to the streets of New York City, and they would get hooked on opium, maybe even the same opium they were guarding. Tell me again, my friends, what do you think is happening? I was reading Zero Hedge because I got bored. But frankly, I'm often more interested in the pop-up ads. The ones that look for your cookies. The ones that look for cookies in your browser. The ones that look at your IP address and say, this guy lives in Seattle. This guy lives in Scompton. This guy lives in New York City. And so we'll show you a specially designed ad just for you. And the one that caught my eye was the one that said erectile dysfunction has been cured. Yes, indeed. It's been cured. Yes, erectile dysfunction has been cured. You see the pop-up ad, and the model in the ad is named Tabitha. She shows up on advertisements for Zero Hedge. She's probably Georgian or Ukrainian or Polish. Tabitha, in that particular ad, ungumbulates her boobies as she massages her boobula. Dribbly juices flow as your copper wand flourishes and imbues her capus hole with snowy weather. Tabitha smiles as she slocks the blue pills and the green pills and the crushed bull testicle, New Zealand-style bee pollen power spice that Alex Jones sells. Your fever increases. Your heart races. Your platinum spear is stiff. Your mind is wired. Tabitha sighs as her power belly stored your load. You are primed in the money phase paradise. You spill some Sieg sauce on her tummy. As her body shivers and her boobs become erector. As you lay there exhausted, a 50-plus-year-old man, nearly heart-flanked, Tabitha grabs your wallet and picks out your Amex Black card and goes and buys stuff on Amazon. You are left alone in a nasty little hotel, someplace in Soho, someplace in Boston. You are left alone in that particular cum-soaked dungeon, surrounded by protein stains and other kinds of greases, the cops with spray bottles, the police with black lights. They're coming soon, and they're gonna show you every stain. Yeah, that's how erectile dysfunction is cured, baby. Dan, that's not funny. I know people with ED, really? And that's their biggest problem in 2023, that they have ED, they're over 50. That's their number one issue. Yeah, gradual, graceful, is that what you're expecting? Not gonna happen. Here are some crime reports from Region Dagon Zulu 11. There have been reports of Duga pirates near Gamma Prime. They carry Voog cannons and have mutant chimpanzee warriors raised to kill and snort meth. Stay away from those chimps. They're dangerous, and they really, really love doing meth. The hooker queen, Yabera, has taken over the flesh trade in Grid 23. She's selling coop bots to the Shriners, who are holding their 1200th conference in alliance with the Masons. Well, that's good news. Rogue ex-cops are converging on the barriers built by the Silk League. Bogan tog slaves are being harvested by these cops who fled Quadrant Whiskey because qualified immunity was removed. Stay away from Quadrant Whiskey. Stay away from Quadrant W. There is disease there. It's getting really, really dangerous. This is your report from Region Dagon Zulu, Zulu 11. This has been your crime report. Now you know the truth. Now you're gonna be a sleuth and figure out things for yourself, right? Now, I don't know what to tell you, baby. But here's what I will say. If you want to donate to this podcast, you can. Before you do, before you click on that PayPal link on my blog or in the notes, listen to the following. Take care of your food, water, shelter first. If you don't have enough of those things, you don't have resources to share. If you have a pet, a dog, a cat, an alligator, a chimpanzee high on meth, if you have a pet and you've set aside food for yourself, for your family, let's say 6 months worth, that's optimism. Make sure you set aside food for your pet. It's easy enough to say, I love my dog, I love Fido so much, but folks, Fido would be willing to die to protect you. Even the little ones, even the tiny dogs that have been mutated beyond belief, having almost no genetic connection to their wolf forebears, even those little dogs would do things for you to protect you. So you need to be thinking about them if you're setting food aside. And so before you send a random stranger what little money you have, take care of Fido. There are likely people in your life, friends, family, neighbors, people in your world that could use help. Before you send money to your good friend Dan, help them. Help those people build social capital. It's not about angling, it's not about grifting, it's not about controlling people, but it is about recognizing that there are human lives around you right now, and many of those people are probably in bad shape and won't admit it. So before you send a stranger any of your hard-earned money, help those people first. And remember, Remember, baby. Remember that it is not the end of the world. So before you send me any of your cash, try to enjoy this life. We're still in the phase where people say, well, Dan, it's going to be a slow burn. It's going to be graceful degradation. It's going to be linear. We're still in the phase where people can grasp that idea and hold it in their head. Well, I'm not suggesting for a moment that you delude yourself. But what I would suggest is that since the grocery stores still work, since restaurants are still open, since there are still things you can go out and do them. I'm not saying go into debt. I'm not saying use resources you don't have. But before you send some scraggly old stranger any of your hard-earned money, spend some of that on yourself. A lot of these things that we take for granted are probably not going to be there, and I don't think it's years away. It's not years or decades. It's not a century away. I think it's weeks and months. Months if we're lucky. But while things still work and while you still have money that folds, take a break. Because it's not the end of the world, but a lot of things are about to end. A lot of realities are about to shift. It's not over. Things, many things are about to be over. So while they still exist, enjoy yourself. Consciously, aware, knowing reality, but be happy. There are times ahead where you're going to say to yourself, well, gee, I had another 10 grand in my bank account and I could have spent a little. You could have. You could have picked up a phone and called an old friend you haven't spoken to. You could have asked that girl out on a date and found out that, hey, she's highly trained and useful in Bo Blimp Doc. You could have done a whole bunch of things, but while you're cowering in a hole someplace not far from Frimpton, you're going to be shivering and thinking to yourself, why didn't I? And my answer to you is, you still can. You can still ask that girl out on a date. You can still get to know your neighbors. You can still pick up the phone and talk to somebody you haven't spoken to in a long time. You still have time for forgiveness. You still, and I still, we still have time for redemption. There is time left. So before you send some nutty old ginger any of your cash, try to take a break for a second. Breathe in that air. Walk outside. Yeah, Mount Rainier looks like shit, but I don't know what it means any more than you. And if you think the weatherman's going to tell you, whether or not, it's not going to happen. But if you've done all those things, and you still have resources left, and you want to donate to this podcast, yeah, I'll take your money. I'll take your money. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to deceive you. This isn't a soft sell, and this isn't a grift. If you're asking me, as I sit in a tent in the woods, could I use a few bucks? Well, who couldn't? And yet, as I look around, I am wealthy compared to a lot of the folks I met on the Greyhound. I am wealthy compared to a lot of the folks that hang out at that Flicks bus stop across from Madison Square Gardens. I am rich compared to many around the world today who are on the run. They're refugees moving from one place to another, hoping they can stop, hoping they can take a rest, hoping they can get some water or some food. And if you're doing better than some middle-aged craphead in the woods, then don't take it for granted. Which also means try to find some joy. And sometimes it takes a few bucks to go do something fun. You know, I saw a movie. I mentioned it, I think. I saw a re-release of They Live, you know, from 1988, Bo Blimp Doc. A great John Carpenter film. I saw it at the movie theater a few weeks ago with my brother, a really good guy. So do that. And then if you want to donate, you can. Anyways, it's Thursday, September the 14th, 2023, almost 5 p.m. here in Scoblinsville, not far from that old body dump nobody talks about. Yes, you can smell the dying ocean. You can see the covered skies of Munctus. You can look at the Olympic Mountains and see that black rock looking back at you. It is Thursday. Tomorrow is Friday. And we are all trying to struggle through this. And some of us carry a lot of physical baggage, and some of us carry a lot of mental baggage, and we're going to struggle through it. And some of us have lots of delusions and illusions. We haven't even remotely touched the Kubler-Ross stages of grieving, and we will get through this. Some of us are pretty close to ground state, and some of us think we are, like me. And in reality, what I've learned in the last month is I am nowhere near ground. On a good day, I'm about 100 feet off the ground. But it's not the end of the world. So have a great weekend. If you don't hear it from me, have a great rest of your Thursday.